This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 30th of April, 1964. The title of this lecture is Effectiveness of Processing. This tape is 90 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you. Well, this is the what? 30th of April, AD 14, St. Hill Special Briefing Course. All right. We've had a little slowdown here recently on research the last 6-7 days. I managed to get the show back on the road again, mostly due to the nonsense going on in Australia. The general situation with regard to that is they're not in any danger or anything like that. They're just being cross-advised and being generally upset. The government of Australia, in the form of little pips, I mean, this is... anyhow, they have this parliament, and it has very, very great... it's all swollen up on itself, because it used to be the state of Australia used to meet there, see? And they don't realize that it doesn't anymore, but it's just the Parliament of Victoria, see? Well, these little boys have an opposition there that are quite red, and they all of a sudden decided under a fellow named Galbatty to investigate Scientology on account of how bad it all was, you see? And... I just this is the message I want to get across to you, not the state of Australia. An organization starts slipping. They stop following through standard policies. They're not on the ball here, and they individuate there, and they goof up someplace else. And then you all of a sudden start having trouble in their vicinity. And it finally swells up to something like this inquiry, you see, and that sort of thing. Just everybody has, to some degree or another, taken his finger off of his number and goofed up. You get the idea. In this particular case, why they ran some jerk down there who what they knew was a security risk. He couldn't pass an E-meter test if he'd held a gun to his head. He is just a complete bum, so they go ahead and give him high-level processing. Name is Wern. I give this fellow a bunch of high-level processing and re-stimulate two or three wrong goals on him one way or the other, so he goes into a complete spin. I think he'd been in psychiatric treatment, and he went back under psychiatric treatment. And then he went over and see Galbatty to get Galbatty to pass legislation so as to cure his GPMs. And it just all went to smoke, and it never even occurred to anybody down in Melbourne simply to handle Wern, refund his money, and straighten him up. When they did refund his money, they didn't even require him to sign a release. So they went and refunded his money, went over to the court the same afternoon, and filed a suit for £160,000. I mean, it takes genius. See? It just takes goof up after goof up. Now they've been testifying on the stand down there, nothing but class 6 material, class 5, class 6 material, yap, 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 yap. Not realizing that all it is a fishing expedition by the opposition, don't you see, to get a lot of oddities they can quote and say, you see, Scientology is just silly, it quote all these things out of context, you see, and then go stampede other state legislatures, you see, into passing legislation against Scientology. Well, finally, the opposition took its finger off of its number down there. And a document passed into our hands on testimony, suggested testimony for witnesses, and it turns out to be the minutes of their second meeting of witnesses wherein they were arranging testimony which they should give at this free, open, public inquiry. If you want to look up the records, the Profumo witnesses are still in prison for having done this exact thing, you see. Well, all this is very interesting. The Profumo witnesses, to the contrary, as soon as I got hold of this document, in this case, what we do about it. Meantime, this inquiry is costing the organization £500 a week. So every time you turn around, there's a cable through from down there. Send us 500 pounds, you say. Send us 500 pounds. Send the, 2 through 3 days later, send us 500 pounds. We finally gave them a guarantee from a Swiss bank. They guaranteed their bank account. And the bank down there, I guess, has mostly kangaroos for customers. This bank didn't understand what this Swiss bank blocked fund guarantee was, which was that if they... if their overdraft wasn't met, the money would simply pass into the bank to meet the overdraft. They couldn't understand this. The only bank in the world that couldn't have understood it. So they're still at this business. I've just a little while ago, one came through. Send us $2,000 at once, you see. They won't at any, they don't realize that this is sort of silly. While they're busy sending through these demands to get them off the hook, because they can't stand up to it, the instructions going their way, you see, are just being disregarded. And the instructions were simply, walk into the inquiry and say we couldn't testify anymore because of collusion and fraud, and produce the document, and that would be that. Of course, that would definitely be that. It would probably result in the resignation of the premier who ordered the inquiry. Well, all this is very interesting. We got this evidence, got it all rigged up. I planted the howitzer, tied the opposition across the muzzle of the howitzer, showed everybody where the lanyard was. All they had to do was jerk on it slightly and said, all right, pull the lanyard. And that's the end of the inquiry, end of the situation. Everybody promptly ran away and said there everything under the sun, but they wouldn't go near the lanyard, see? So the attorney's down there, busy telling the staff how this document is unimportant, that it doesn't mean anything, because it was known to the fellow who was running the Board of Inquiry. So they all bought this, you see. The document is valueless, but the same attorney, directly, immediately, and at once, has telex through a long letter to me on the basis of, for God's sake, don't! No, 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 because it'll unseat the incumbent government of Victoria just before the election. Finish him. So while he's telling the organization that it's unimportant and means nothing, finally I start hammering on him hard enough and he comes through with the truth. He's protecting the government of Victoria, first, and Scientology, second. He says, of course, if the opposition got in because of this terrible scandal and so forth, why, they would pass material against Scientology, and he's very reasonable about this sort of thing. But I just wonder why he would tell staff down there that it is so unimportant when he tells me, oh, no, don't, please, you know. His fingernails are chewed off clear of the third joint. You see what the situation is. We have it in our power, simply give a little tug on this lanyard, and that is the end of any future inquiry, practically, on Scientology to the end of time. Everybody would say, leave those people alone. Horrible. Now, that's the existing thing. Now, they won't do it. They won't present this evidence. And I wouldn't go along with this, but they practically not even be being practical enough to go around to the incumbent and say, hey, bud, why don't you meet the organization's cost for this inquiry, which was normal in any case, and just pass a little bill, sort of, and say that's the end of the inquiry, we didn't have anything, and we won't release it. That's using it for blackmail. You at least got that, see? No suggestion of that has come across or anything of the sort. But these cables keep coming through. Send us $2,000 so we can pay this week's bills at the inquiry. See? All right, there's a GPM to create problems. I just wish they'd move up the track to the next GPM, which is to destroy problems. Now, that's what has interrupted research here for the last 6 days, trying to get through, trying to get things clarified, trying to get things squared around. Every once in a while, an organization will start to skid a little bit on execution of this, following a policy that, being on the ball here. See? Then the next thing you know, why, they're in deep, dark, stumbling trouble of some kind or another. Then at that point, just to give you the rest of the lesson, when you try to straighten it out, you've got all kinds of cross currents going on where everybody's got them hypnotized into believing something else, and you can't get an execution at the point of trouble. So it just goes up in a balloon. Now, the organization will be all right. It'll survive simply for the excellent reason that they'll be forced to take some kind of a solution along this particular line. Of course, I always believe that when somebody comes and attacks Scientology on a frontal attack and starts doing things one way or the other, if he at any time laid himself out on the carving table and said, "Carve," I would simply pick up the biggest knife. I mean, I haven't got any circuitous thinking on this particular subject. Somebody says, "Down with Scientology, shoot all Scientologists," and so forth, and here's a piece of evidence by which you can shoot me. My finger instantly, one split second later, would twitch. This is terribly, I'm afraid, unsubtle. It's just unsubtle. But it's that situation which exists in Victoria as of this minute. All anybody'd have to do is just twitch his finger, and that would be the end of inquiry and the end of really all future inquiries. And it would probably be the end of the FDA trial in Washington, because rumors abound that it was Washington money which started the inquiry in Australia in the first place. This investigation would back all the way back up and probably be the end of the E-meter trial in Washington. But there it is. There it is. Now, we're not going to do anything more with them. They can go ahead and work their own destiny out in their own peculiar way. It'll probably all come out all right somehow or another. I just hope that we don't, for years and years and years, fight this confounded basket full of testimony, which is non-factual and so forth, that it won't keep appearing in other state legislatures as reasons why they should pass laws to debar Scientology. I just hope that won't happen. But it's on Melbourne's head. That's it. I have spoke. All right. Now, let's talk about just bringing you up to date, giving you the gen zip-zap center rapidly. If you ever find an organization or area in Scientology, I'll give you this as a little moral lesson, which is slipping, you know, slipping one way or the other. Well, actually, we don't have any classified auditors auditing anybody around here. We didn't believe in that, you see. No, the pre-clear, nobody keeps any logbook, you know. So nobody ever keeps any auditors' reports on sessions, you see. We don't believe in, you see, this, that, the other thing, slipping. You know what you're looking at in the future. You're looking for a complete bust. It isn't, you see, that centrally Scientology and its control areas or international board is always right. That isn't the case. But it is at least always uniform, and these things are built out of errors which have developed in the past and their efforts to guide a safe course through the rocks and shoals of processing and organizational activities. When those things are all abandoned, naturally the errors which they prevent occur. And when those occur, you get a deterioration of the situation. All right. I don't know what to talk to you about today. You don't look like you need a good talking to. You look like you're doing all right. Except you, of course. You look like you're doing all right. So on. I could give you a bit of a talk on the HGC allowed process, but I don't happen to have a list of them sitting in front of me. But the whole basis that I could talk to you about and will talk to you about is simply the effectiveness of processing and effective processing. That's all. Just you, the auditor, bringing about a desirable effect on the PC. Just that, nothing more. Nothing fancier than that. Now, that is quite a subject. And it's the subject that you are grappled with in studying. And sometimes you forget you are grappled with that subject and think you are just grappled in with bulletins or tapes or something like this. But actually, all the way along the line, you are simply handling this one single subject and problem, which is, how do I, the auditor, produce desirable effect upon the PC? That is the entirety of your activity. Now, of course, you, the auditor, could go into group auditing, that is to say, the old-style group auditing, where you have a lot of people in chairs and they execute the commands from somebody on the platform. You could have the same problem there. How do you, standing up before a group and group auditing it, produce an effect on the PC? And also, how do you, the auditing supervisor, when you're running a co-audit, get an effect produced on the PCs in the co-audit which you are conducting, you see? And also, this could go into how do you, the auditor, by training alone and teaching a PE course or something of that sort, produce an effect on the cases of the people who are listening to your talks and lectures. It goes out into that ramification. Now, I can go a little bit further. How do you, as a Scientologist, produce an effect on somebody that you're talking to? Drop out the idea of an auditing action. How do you, the Scientologist, produce an effect on somebody you're talking to? You're talking to George Q. Blitz, and he wots not of what you are or anything of the sort, and without your giving him an ACC on the subject of Scientology or even discussing Scientology at all, how do you produce an effect upon this gent? Now, all of these things come under the heading of the production of an effect, don't they? Now, just production of an effect, then a production of a desirable effect, then a production of a desirable effect upon PCs or other than PCs as subdivisions of this. So it's just the production of an effect. And if I were to teach you just cleanly and totally how to produce an effect on another human being, it could go into very numerous subjects. There's a subject of armaments. You cock a gun and you pull the trigger and a bullet arrives in somebody else's skull, you produce an effect on that individual. Now, governments, lacking adroitness and so forth, really, in the final last resort, only produce that effect. They are producing an effect on somebody through the channels of destruction. They are trying to get compliance through threat. Now, that is a whole field, an area, and is exactly 50% of the production of an effect general subject. That's 50% of existence. That's the production of an effect by threat, menace, force, duress, strength. You get the idea. And that's, I'm giving you this very, very technically. This is 50%. Exactly. Of the ways of producing an effect are in that category. Now, if we study that 50%, we will find that nearly all mental healing activities, sooner or later, drift into it. Psychiatry, with its prefrontal lobotomy, electric shocks, wet packs, chemical shocks, biochemical administrations of one kind or another, is drifted over into the solid form effect. There are two reasons for this. One, they do not realize they're trying to influence thought. They have no definition of thought. They don't even think anything is their thinking. They are trying to influence matter. Man to them is matter, and they are using matter to influence matter. So they're actually in the field of physics, not in the field of mental healing. And it's drifted over to that direction. Every once in a while, a psychiatrist will err in the direction of producing a kindly effect. it's a stray. And I'm not being sarcastic. I'm just talking right straight off the record. He strays over and he says something friendly to somebody. Any of his friendly ideas toward a patient, when he exhibits them, are in the zone and area of a pitch. He knows it's a pitch, and so's the patient. The ARC is he isn't there at all. He tries to be friendly so as to get the patient to confess more. There's always a lot of falsity involved in this sort of thing. So, you run a danger in operating 100% in that remaining 50%. You're operating wholly in the remaining 50%. The production of a beneficial effect. And operating in that 50% of the sector, you have left the other 50% slightly on automatic. So therefore, you occasionally drift over into it. Once in a while, you drift over into it. Once in a while, as an auditor, you've just had too much, and you explode, and you tell the PC to hell with you. It happens to the best of auditors. That's because he's got a 50% area here that he's not operating in. So occasionally it goes on automatic. You follow that. It's almost inevitable that an auditor sooner or later is going to blow up a PC. Now, let me point out to you this other fact, that an auditor in that blow-up never has, doesn't, and never will produce an improvement of case in the PC. You have to be there in the driver's seat a few times like this and watch yourself blow up under tremendous stress. Ah, this person's just too much, man, you know? Every time you turn around, why, you're trying to help them out, and they ARC break. You try to help them out some more, and they ARC break, and they ream you out, and so forth. And you finally let them have it, see? What cures you of that? The best cures are Class 6 materials. Now, what cures you of doing that? At Class 6, there are so many examples of this, abundant examples. PC's been ARC breaky. PC's been ARC breaky. PC's been ARC breaky. You've blown up. And then your red face a few sessions later to find out that you were running it all upside down and backwards. That there was bypass charge there. See? You don't get as much of an opportunity to get clean-cut examples of this at the lower levels because those bypass charges are mainly session bypass charges, but you still run into them. And after your face has been reddened with the blush of shame a few times at realizing that you actually had skipped a GPM on the PC, you know, nothing slight, you just skipped a whole GPM. You're going back over your auditor's reports, ta-da, 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 one day, you know, and looking it over, let's see, what did we run on this fellow, and so forth. Well, we ran number 3, and then we ran number 4, and then we ran number 6, and then we ran number 7, and then we, what? Oh, my God. No wonder he was ARC breaky. Now, you know, and it never comes emerges clearer, that you made a mistake, PC got ARC breaking, and you blew up in his face. The reason why the PC operated that way lays there very wide open. It's visual to the eye, and you say, well, I blew up for nothing. I had this sort of an experience, one time. Found out almost 150 hours later that the person had been in an actual RI at a particular moment when they had just been too insufferable for words. and I had been gnashing my teeth privately to myself about what horrible PCing this person did. Almost 200 hours later, I was running down the track, PC, and my gosh, we collided head-on with the RI that PC had been in at that moment of that ARC break, because it had been bypassed at that moment. It had been walked right on by. It hadn't been accepted on the list. But I recalled it because there'd been an argument about it. After that, for several sessions, the PC was very ARC breaking, easily upset. But this whole sector over here, 50%. And that's wide open for an auditor to blow up in. But what does he accomplish? All he accomplishes is a mess up. He really doesn't actually bring about any destruction. He just messes it up. Now to go on and do something is a harder task than if he hadn't moved over into that sector. Let me give you a broad example. It's much easier to process somebody before he has had his prefrontal lobotomy than afterwards. You see? Just classify the prefrontal lobotomy over here as an extremis of destructive action toward the PC. Well, similarly, on a much, much lighter level, it is far easier to straighten out the ARC break before you have blown up, you, the auditor, in the PC's face one way or the other. You know, I'm not going to process you anymore. You keep talking to me like that. Even if it's that mild. You'll find yourself falling across that one, falling across that one, falling across that one. Wow. You finally, out of your own self-defense, not because you've done anything to PC, because it's causing you so much trouble, you begin to say, why did I ever do it? It's a kickback mechanism that operates in the final analysis to an auditor with experience as a disciplinary factor. All he has to do is recognize this, and he sees at once what the disciplinary factor is with regard to it. So you're actually not keeping the auditor's code because I tell you to. You're keeping it because if you do anything else but keep the auditor's code, you have made far more trouble for yourself as the auditor with that PC than you can easily undo. And now you're in an awful mess. It's a self-disciplinary type of activity. Now, I warn you that this big sector does exist. 50%. A destructive sector. So that if left at random, every other effect produced would be destructive if you just had this thing going at random. It's like you flip a coin 50 times, why, you're going to get 25 heads and 25 tails, usually on the average. 50% the chances are. So if you had an unintentional, undirected, just any old way type of thing. You weren't worried about interpersonalizing, you weren't worried about anything of the sort, but were just delivering random communications or cause distance effect lines, you might say, to the PC, then 50% of them would be destructive and 50% of them would be constructive. That's the random. Suppose you didn't know anything about Scientology, you understand? This would be the random selector. Well, you're specialist over here in the other 50%. Fortunately, by the laws of life, it's this remaining 50% sector, the good sector, you see, is the only one which has any lasting benefit or there is any direction up or anything else. The odd part of it is, it isn't a proposition in black and white. It isn't a proposition of putting something there or wiping something out. It isn't that 50-50. It's by the definitions of create and construct, which you get out of fundamentals of thought. You don't ever really destroy anything. It's not take something away. You're dealing in a sector over here, then, whereby you can do something constructive by actually deleting something. But the other sector is just messing up what is already wrong. Eradication has to be 100% before it is effective. If you want to know the truth of it, if you wanted a purity of destruction, you'd get a not-there-ness. But destruction does not go in that direction. When you rehabilitate the individual, it isn't enough to knock down the prison walls and leave them in rubble with him buried under them. See, that'd be a destructive way of going about freeing an individual.
Oh, we want to get Joe out of the dungeon. Good. Blow up the castle. Boom.
Where is Joe? So the action of destruction, as it's normally commonly understood, is not an action which produces a result on a case. All it produces is mess up. Now, an as-ising of a situation is not looked on by you or me or anybody else really as destruction. It's looked on as a constructive action. Now, Joe's in the prison, and we say, no castle, there stands Joe. No rubble. Simple, clean. We look upon that as beneficial. Actually, that's an ultimate in this other 50%. If you had an ultimate destruction, you wouldn't even have the rubble. But you'd still have Joe. Now, if the way to handle Joe as an individual is to set him free, and it is, then the destructive action that you're engaged on would not be messing up what he's caught in, but it would consist of the as-ising rather smoothly of what he has caught in. Take a good workman and take down his jail, see? Now, the only thing that Joe objects to is having it all rubbleified in his vicinity. Having it so messily knocked apart that he can't find his way through it. Now he hasn't got a castle, and he is not free, but he's got an awful lot of shambles. And that's what he objects to. He doesn't object to being free. He doesn't object to the disappearance of his dungeon. He objects to it being done in such a way that he's battered about and surrounded by rubble. So, the effect that you're trying to produce on the PC is an infinitely simple one. You are simply trying to set the individual free by as-ising what the individual has caught him. And without destroying the individual, and without leaving a lot of rubble around. And that's really all you're trying to do in the effect you're producing on the PC. You're frankly, it can be done in the mind. It's a relatively easy magician's trick with the mind. You go, he's surrounded by this birdcage called mother-in-law, see? And he's worried all the time about the mother-in-law, worried all about the mother-in-law, worried about the time about the mother-in-law. He can't think about his job or anything else because his mother-in-law. Oh, he's worried. All right. Your magic trick as an auditor is as-ising this cage called mother-in-law so as not to leave a lot of rubble around. Now, the way you would leave rubble around is this sort of an approach. Counseling, see? Put your mind on something else. Assert yourself in the home. These are various types of advice, don't you think? Assert yourself in the home. Do not permit yourself to be dominated by women. How much rubble do you think is going to start gathering along about this point? Huh? In the first place, you've launched simply other determined and not pan-determined action. So therefore, you've set up conflict between two other terminals. You've made trouble in life for somebody else. So you're going to start adding to the debris and trouble of life with such advice as assert yourself around home, you see, or something like that. Turn your attention in the other direction. Don't think about it. Learn to sit still and look at your navel and not think. These are all advices of the past that I'm giving you. They're not just cracks. Assume the ib position. That's one of the plays Shakespeare wrote, ibid. I'm not kidding. In other words, do something that doesn't do anything about the problem at all. I was struck by it last night. I was looking up a thesaurus. That's why it came up at this particular point. It seems like the only play he ever wrote. So anyway, life, then, could be handled in a way of setting it into more violent counter-motion against itself. You could handle life by setting it into more violent counter-motions. War, for instance, is one of the chronic errors that man falls into. Let us solve the problems of the Balkans by going to war. See, this is to set terminals at other terminals. And have you ever noticed the amount of debris which accumulates when this occurs? The amount of breakage is fabulous. You can still, even this late, go up around London and you can still see bits of debris which came out of that last big solution. See, it's still there and still knocked about. And that's solving things by setting terminals at terminals or making somebody's attention go off of the subject or so forth. Now, those are the mechanisms by which life handles its problems. Those are the mechanisms. And you as an auditor actually are being asked to decry, throw aside, and so forth, the standard dramatizing solutions that life is prone to. You're asked as an auditor to assume a better discipline, which is a more workable discipline. In other words, let's find out what the problem is, what considerations they've had about the problem, what they've done to solve it. Because these, we find, are the building blocks of the cage. Those are the building blocks of the prison. The problem itself, what they have said the problem was, or what has caused it, and solutions they have had to what they thought it was. Those are the building blocks. And after they've got through building all these things up, they got a pretty big dungeon. They got a big dungeon called mother-in-law, or big dungeon called government, or they've got something, you see, and this thing is built up. But that's what all the cage is built out of. Not built out of another blessed thing. Somebody had to conceive there was a problem there, then had to conceive the problem was something different. We had to get an alterism of the original problem, by the way. Had to conceive the problem was different, and then conceive that there are other problems. And each time they had a concept of what the problem is, then have to solve that in numerous ways before they really have a first-class dungeon. That's how one's built. You have to say, well, I have a problem at home. I'm not happy with my home. In other words, here he is versus the home, see? He has to say, I have this problem. Oddly enough, there doesn't have to be any prior art. Nothing has to have existed before that point. He had to have had needed no reason, because a thetan is always capable of postulation. And then he had to find a justification of some kind or another for this problem to exist, so he altered the problem a little bit. He said, it's because of my mother-in-law, she is the problem. Well, now, of course, she can't be the problem, because she's not two terminals up to this point. She's just one. So now he has to then say it was the mother-in-law, and then he has to assume that he is against her and that she is causing the difficulty. And then he has to go ahead and solve this. Now, of course, he already solved home as a problem by saying it was caused by his mother-in-law and she was the problem. That's the first solution, is the announcement of the first problem. All right. Now he's got to solve this situation one way or the other. He's got to work at it one way or the other. He buys her some croquet mallets, so she'll take up croquet, you see, and go off and so forth, or... He does something or other. He makes extraordinary actions in life. Well, after a while, you can count on the fact that although his home is not happy, the problem he has set up, mother-in-law, has been solved into submergence. It's disappeared from view. He no longer can enunciate what the problem is, but he can enunciate the last solutions that he had to it, and he will now find what's wrong with his life is the last solution he had to his mother-in-law. That is now the problem. See? His last solution, that he would never go home. See, now it's now a problem, because he can never seem to go home. He's now forcing himself to go home, but he can't go home. See, this is now the problem, his inability to go home. He's even forgotten why he started not to go home. So now he starts solving this problem. He tries to make home more attractive. He tries to get himself in trouble outside of home so that he will go home. And eventually he gets himself messed up with what is commonly called an affair. See? The reason he gets himself messed up in this affair is the girl always said, you ought to go home now. See? And this... So this is now the problem. It was the solution, you see, but now it's a problem again. So he's starting to solve this sort of thing. And he goes off in a long concatenation of solutions. Now, this fellow is walking around in circles in life by this time. He doesn't know whether he is there or went. He knows that he is unhappy. It is not just an item, unhappiness, that causes him to be unhappy. He can actually, off his own bat, be unhappy. Everything seems sort of dimmed down. He seems to sort of have his mind on something all the time. He seems a little abstracted. He can't concentrate, or he does something wrong. Okay. Now, that is the prison, and he has built it up himself out of some basic and fundamental problem. Now, your art as the auditor is as-ising, not destroying. You're as-ising these bits and pieces that made up this cage, and you'll find that as you as-is them, they disappear. You're not then adding to this enormous structure, which he's already got by giving him new solutions. All right, now let me give you an example here now. Supposing your PC was totally uneducated. A very untutored, unlearned PC, and you're really trying to fish him out of the soup and the best of your ability and so forth, and you were running, what problem have you had in order to get the PC to as is the problems they have had? I know you don't run this particular process, but let's just say you were. It still can do it. You can still get away with it. You won't get much toner. And your PC was inventing new problems to have. And you were unaware of this as an auditor and thought the PC was giving you problems the PC had had. And in actual fact, the PC was giving you new problems that he had never had. He's running a process called invent a new problem, and you're trying to run a process called as is your old problem. You see that? Now, supposing your understanding was deficient to that degree, that you were trying to get him to as-is bank, and you didn't realize that he could very easily be making new bank. And supposing you didn't add this up, well, your PC wouldn't improve. That would be the exact penalty right at that point. PC might even be happy with you. The PC might even be still talking to you. PC this, PC that. But sooner or later, you're going to decide that you are off on the wrong tack somehow or another, because this PC doesn't seem to be able to get rid of these phobias and nonsenses. What process am I talking about? I'm just talking about R1C. And we add an M to it, it gives you the meter. Follow the blowdown after you finish the cycle of action. You, after a while, would decide you'd better go off on a new tack. So you go off on a new tack and you'd run something else, touch that wall or something like this. PC isn't going to improve now. Very minor improvement. Yeah, you decide, well, I better do something else. So you do something else. And you do something else. The PC doesn't improve that. Sooner or later, you're going to get mad at the PC and start moving over into the destruction cycle. There's nothing calculated to make an auditor more mad with the PC than the PC not improving. Some PCs understand this very clearly and tell you with great propitiation that they are greatly improved. When they're not. But do you recognize that as a little deficiency of understanding of what you're supposed to do? Supposing the auditor was deficient in that little piece of understanding. The auditor isn't trying to knock out anything. The auditor happily sits there and lets new things be added to the case. Well, the only reason he'd do something else other than watch these little bits get knocked out, the only reason he'd do something else is because he didn't understand he was supposed to knock out these little bits. Now, another deficiency in delivering processing to the PC comes under the heading of not realizing that it has went. This probably is the most mystifying thing to the new auditor. And he is always hounding a PC about the problem that has just gone. He becomes completely baffled because he sees no debris. Well, his magic consists of as-ising without debris. He's as-is this thing. The auditor who doesn't know his business doesn't recognize that he is blowing things. He's as-ising things by the simple process of inspection and communication on the part of the PC. Order from the auditor, the PC inspects it, PC looks at it, says something to the auditor about it, and he goes. So, this fellow is something like trying to make a steak dinner out of a sliver of bacon, see? This auditor, see? He gets this little tiny sliver of bacon on the plate, and that's all he can see he's ever going to have on his plate. He gets the PC to admit that he has trouble in the office with some of the other people in the office. Okay. So he's got that now on the plate. That's a sliver of bacon. He starts treating it like a steak dinner. Okay. He's going to process this. He's got his timetable all figured out in front of him. Well, I'm all set now. Got the next 75, 125 hours of processing all fixed up. I'll straighten this fella up with regard to the office. Okay. All set, see? No, he says, all right, now. The fellow says, the PC sort of, all right, what? Now, about your difficulties at the office. The PC looks a little bit blank for a minute. Oh, yes. He gets it back again, see? He kind of mocks it up once more. Now, about your difficulties at the office, who do you detest most at the office? Detest most at the office. I don't detest anybody at the office. I just always had to sort of withhold. I just didn't like to be there, you know? Well, yes, very good. Let's make this bacon out of this. It's beginning to look a little bit shriveled here. There's something wrong going on. Well, now, how do we approach this problem? The auditor is saying, you see. How do we attack this problem? Well, he's in the same position as the fellow fencing air. The dimensions of the problem were 1/1000th of a nothing by 1/1000th of a nothing to begin with, don't you see? And it went, and that was the end of that. Now, you could train an auditor if a PC uniformly always cognited. But on these little things, there isn't enough horsepower in them to generate a good cognition, see? So the PC would say, oh, I just realized I didn't like the boss. Gee, I feel much better now. The auditor would say, oh, well, we don't have to have that steak dinner here. We're all set, see? And unfortunately, all auditing is made out of these little slivers of bacon, see? And the auditor that really has a tough time is trying to get a piece of steak on the plate every time he's just got this bit of grease. Because it's always blowing, see? It's always blowing. It's insubstantial. The PC's sitting there and he gives them all this long song and dance about something or other. The auditor takes it all down and figures it all out and then says, we now have the design of the situation and we know now what we're going to attack on the case. And it's blown. The new auditor probably has a tremendous embarrassment of never really realizing what auditing is for. Why all these TRs and these drills? And why this adherence to a comm cycle? Why all this other? He never adds that in to any of this other thing. Of course, they're there to bring about the as-is. You ask a question, you're really saying, here's something, let's see if you can as-is it. The PC says, oh, yes, well, all right. And the auditor is saying, all right, it's as-is. See? That's actually what this auditing comm cycle is all about. But people don't easily add that up to the other situation. They don't recognize what auditing is all about because it looks very, very, must be very complicated. It's made this fellow terribly sick for years, made him sick, unhappy, miserable, made him complete dope, a social pariah for all these years. And at the end of 35 minutes or something like that, obviously something like this should take a long time. At the end of 35 minutes, it might just have blown up. But if the auditor had estimated that it was a long, serious problem, the auditor can keep chipping away at it for the next 20 hours. Of course, he's making no progress at all on the case because he's making the PC pull back things that have went. He doesn't recognize the ease with which this basic auditing comm cycle can actually blow something. So you're always having them ask about things that are blown. Quite common. Now, an auditor gets so fixated, this is the other side of the coin, on having them all blow easily, that once in a while he runs into a brick wall if it didn't. And it's just like stepping for the step, you see. You know, you're at the bottom of the stairs and you try to go down one more step. It's with a terrible shock that you hit the landing with your foot, you see. A misestimation, you know. Oh, we figured this all out, and we got it all out, and we ran all this thing all out, and I'm still worried about it. What happened? Well, what happened there is that you happen to, you see all these little symptoms of existence can fall into two categories. Those that are floating loose and flancy free, and those that have got roots. So the PC's upsets and phobias are not always rooted. Unlike Freudian assumptions, you do not have to assume that the reason he is fond of eating with his spoon rather than his fork. You do not have to assume that this grows roots clear to the center of the earth. You don't have to assume that at all. Those roots might go no deeper, you see, than a slight personal preference based on an idiosyncrasy he made up his mind with in the army. It did nothing, see. It doesn't have any depth. There's no depth there. It's like trying to jump into a 1-inch deep swimming pool, right? And you try to go any deeper than that, and you're in for an awful thud because there's nothing deeper, see. So you might say that it isn't any precise percentage, but a large percentage of these things that worry people have no roots. They aren't deeply rooted in the subconscious, reconscious. You understand? They just don't go down to the center of the earth. And then there are a few subjects and items, the display of which in this lifetime is just a little flag. It's just a little flag. And boy, you pick up this little flag, you think, well, it's just like everything else, and you all of a sudden pick up this little flag, you know. You thought you were catching minnows, you know, and boy, you got a whale on the other end of it, and he's anchored right to the bottom of the ocean. You move that flag, and it's you that move, not the flag. It's a little telltale. This thing goes clear to China. We don't know what happened here. Every once in a while, an auditor will hit one of these things, which is simply a symptom of some very, very fundamental, deep-lying mass and significance in the case. And, of course, it just doesn't shake. This is about the only thing that ever gets in the road of clearing. You go along the line, pocket to pocket to pocket, everything's fine. All of a sudden, why, you're going to get rid of his lumbosis too, see? And I'll show you exactly where you make the mistake. You take something which has no needle reaction or TA blowdown, but which is obvious and visible, but which doesn't respond on the meter. And all these little flags bear that characteristic. Now, your lumbosis now, and that is just one smooth, uninterrupted rise. Your lumbosis now, has that gotten worse or better in the last few weeks? Just one long, uninterrupted rise. There is not the least quiver on that needle on the subject of lumbosis, and there is not the least blowdown on the part of that toned arm. And all the PC tells you he has lumbosis, he knows he has lumbosis, and he could discuss lumbosis for quite some time. Your TA just sits there and does absolutely nothing, and your needle does not respond in any way, shape, or form. It's an obvious manifestation. The guy does have lumbosis, see? This is obvious. And it does not respond on the meter. Therefore, it goes all the way to China. And the more you talk about it, the more trouble you are going to get into. Because if you force the PC into a recognition of the reality of that condition, you pin him instantly and at once to his most fundamental bank. Just like that. It's very, very interesting. You could take somebody who has no manifestation about it. He is not, his wife's going to leave him tomorrow. You can't get him interested in the subject. You see, the auditor, in each one of these cases where the auditor picks up this flag that goes all the way to China, It's going to be the auditor who recognizes it. It's going to be the auditor who puts in time on it. It's going to be the auditor who tries to force forward the reality of the situation on the PC. It's the auditor who is doing it. It's the auditor who's perceiving it. It's the auditor who's doing it. And it is not cooperated with but the PC, except to the extent that the PC will answer the auditor's questions. In other words, you've got an unreal subject. Fella walks in. Fella walks in. He's got a paper mache head. You know? You don't say, "How are you, Mr. Jones? How are you feeling today? What's on your mind? What you worried about today?" or something. You'd have to make this kind of a goof. "Hey, we're going to audit this paper mache head." Now, if that paper mache head had no rise or fall, no speeded rise, no speeded fall, no RRs, no drops, no TA blowdowns, nothing with relationship to it. Yes, that's wrong with him, but it goes all the way to China. You're dealing with something there which is below any ability this PC has to perceive. You can see it. He can't. He probably looks in the mirror every morning and sees a regular head. You have to evaluate the importance of the thing for the PC. You have to force the thing into existence. And by the time you've done that, you can actually push a case all around and mess it all up. And you can bog the case down so that it won't get tone arm action. You're not giving him anything he can as is, so he isn't going to have any victories. You're giving him something that's totally unreal to him. Why is it totally unreal? Well, it's just too deep, too fundamental, too far gone. He's not about to have any recognition of it. The main danger there is the auditor deciding what is wrong with the PC and then auditing it. That is the main sin. Now, if the auditor decides what's wrong with the PC and then audits it, it very well may be what's wrong with the PC. It may sometimes be that the auditor can change this with the PC. That can happen too, see, once in a blue moon. But the PC will never find out about it and will be rather resentful, and you won't have as-ised any cage. The only cage the PC can as-is is the one he's aware of. He can't as-is any other cage, and you're dependent upon the ability of the PC to as-is. Now, if you're dependent on the PC's ability to as-is, then you had better depend on auditing what the PC can as-is. Elementary. Now you can force the PC into all sorts of wild, oddball physical manifestations this way. I can just see lines of people walking into the psychoanalytic laboratories without limps and walking out on crutches. I can just see lines of them doing it because they specialize in this. They arrive at this through testing. This is why we don't put very much pressure on testing. It's why we could learn a lot from testing, but we don't really bother to. You understand? This is where testing dead ends. You can read deeper into the psyche than the PC can as is. That's something to remember when you come up against tests. So therefore, a little light, shallow tests are far better than deep, deep, fundamental tests. There might even be something to a Rorschach. See, there might even be something to it, rather than the old, it actually started as a kid's game, you know. It's the kid's inkblot game. You spill some ink on a piece of paper and fold it together and display it out and ask the other kid what it is, you see. It's a kindergarten game. Now, everybody got very fundamental, and they found out that you could read various deep in connotations, and they found out that various psychologically disoriented psychodrams would occur in these things, see? And they coordinated it up empirically against a tremendous number of neurotic and insane persons, and they found out that some coordinations in this, then they could lay out one of these Rorschachs in front of people, get the person's reaction to it, and then they could evaluate the test, and they could say, "This is what is wrong with you." Now look how that operates with the one I'm just talking about. The guy very often sits there and says, "That's what's wrong with me." It's beyond his ability to as is. What you've done is re-stimulate him without any hope of destimulating it. In other words, you could force him to assume the characteristics and dimensions of this neurosis or psychosis. That operation could be put under the heading, "This is how to be nuts." Taught cheap, see? A meter has only this value, that it is at the level of reality of the PC. If it reads on the meter, it has the potential of being real to the preclear. If it does not read on the meter, either it is totally suppressed or it's unreal to the PC. That's the end and short of it. Therefore, this meter is rather beautiful to that regard, in that it can sort out things that the PC can't find are real to him. We take a meter. Let's take an assessment level operation at level four. We say on this meter, we say grandma, mother, wife, aunt, and so forth. Flink. A little tick there, so forth. Now, if we want to be real Swami Gambola, you see, with the complete turban and the Woolworth ruby, all we'd have to do is say, we find that the realest person in your family was your aunt. He'd say, oh, true, true, true. That coordinates instantly and at once, you see. You had certain interpersonal relations with your aunt. Oh, yes, yes, she used to talk to me all the time. So you understand, that's assessment for reality. See, you just name off his family members, one of them falls, you just say, that's the realest person to you. Doesn't matter whether they're the maddest at him. See, or what the interpersonal relationship is between him and this person. We know his mind is on that person. We know that he can have a reality on that person. Therefore, we know what he can as is about his family. He can as is sections relating to that person. And by the time he's got unpinned off of that, we could say the whole family over to him again, and this time it would be grandmama. And suddenly and mysteriously, we would have a lot of things that of reality about grandmama. And he all of a sudden can as is those. And we say all over to him again, all the family names. And now we have papa. Ah, great. Because he now can as is something about papa, who he dramatizes all the time. But supposing we had gone about it this way, much more intricately. Now, you fill out this paper of your characteristics of the ideal person, the ideal villain, what novels you read most, what type of tobacco you have. Now, here's another piece of paper. What are the types of tobacco and the reading habits of each family member, and so forth. And you say, well, you're actually dramatizing your father. He'd say, this is a disaster. Horrible. And he'd go off all beaten down, see? And develop all of Papa's ills. See, it's just on this little simple trick. What can you do with a PC? Well, you can do with a PC what's real to the PC. You can as is in a PC what the PC has a reality on. And having as-ised it, you have a little more cage taken apart so he can see a little bit further, so you can find something new for him to have a reality on. And you can as-is that. And it's just a progressive line of taking down the cage. But you try to take down the moat while he's still in the deepest dungeon. He could very easily drown without even coming near the moat, don't you see? I'm suffering asphyxiation, and I don't know why. Oh, you're taking down the moat. Well, go on. You know all about the moat. Yes, yes. The moat's green, scummy water and so forth. Now, get the idea of being drowning in green, scummy water. And don't blame me if you find your PC sitting there stone dead in the chair and the diagnosis is that he drowned. This is what's known as running somebody. We have a lot of little careless phrases that go by describes this. Running somebody above their level of reality. These usually very glib. But they have a tremendous fundamental truth back of all these things. Therefore, the auditor who sits there and audits PC in some other frame of reference than the PC being able to recognize where the PC is, and audit him on things the PC can have a reality on, the auditor who audits that way wins, the auditor who doesn't audit that way loses. That's the magic of auditing. That's the magical trick. And you could do almost anything with a PC, almost anything, if you know these little things, you see. I don't care what process you're running. Processes are important because they tell you how to get to these points of reality. Now, everybody, unless he's stone dead and long gone, everybody has some reality on some level of A, some level of R, some level of C. So we find processes which are based on A, R, and C interpret with the wildest variability with the PC, but yet hit some level of recognizability in the PC. You say, who do you like? Oh, I like Joe. Now, what's he mean when he said he liked Joe? The semantics of the situation are is he's fond of Joe, but he isn't answering that way at all. A little bit later, he's telling you he's really apathetic about Joe. He keeps reinterpreting what his emotional reactions are on the A line. Quite interesting. What's real in this room is probably one of the most nebulous questions ever asked. The auditor doesn't recognize this is a nebulous question. PC walks over. All the performances, the question seems direct. All the performances seem very direct. The PC walks over and he picks up that wire over there, that white wire, and he said, that is very, very, very real. I don't know what he means, but it means he can recognize a white wire. I don't know what he means. I don't even know what he means when he says he can recognize it. But it means that, to me, for the benefit of just the process itself, that he can see it, recognize, and direct his attention to it. Great. That's all I'm asking. I don't care what else he means. It's nothing to me. See, look around here and find something that's really real to you. Ah, it's an interesting question. What goes on in the PC's head when he answers that question? Wow. Now, beware of the PC when you're running processes like that, who just glibly ticks off everything, and you know he's in a bad state, but he can just tick off everything. What's really real to me? Well, the carpet's really real to me, the roof's really real to me, and the beams are really real to me, and the walls are really real to me, and the windows are really real to me, and everything is really real to me. Everything's all really real to me, and everything's all... I conclude about that time that I was several stratospheres above where I ought to be running. Because one of two things will happen. Either his havingness will increase and he'll be getting tone arm action. He'll be getting quite a bit of tone arm action. If he's that good on reality, why, just the fact that he's shifting his eyeballs and looking around and getting havingness and so forth is going to shift his tone arm around, you see. This guy must be a whiz-bang. So he's going to get tone arm action, he's going to get needle reaction. Yeah, it's real, see. Needle action, a bit of tone arm action tells him, yes, that's true. Carpet's really real, and the beams are really real, and the walls are really reacting here, and the tone arms, and the needles. It's true. But the case that always got the auditor in trouble was the person who had HC completely flat. Run it off a mile a minute. And never from the time they started it on would they ever get a twitch or a flick on that unless it's caused by a body motion. They suddenly jump up in the chair and sit down again, and you see the needle move. But the action of running these things off, you know, talking about this or that, produced no reaction on the meter and produced no tone arm reaction.
No wonder they could be so glib. They're going through some kind of a circuitry response. They're not there. They have been educated into naming of objects in areas or something, and they don't have anything to do with it, and they can just, you know, and nothing to do with it, not even in the universe, nothing worries me, I'm perfectly free as a bird sitting down in the middle of this rock. They haven't any recognition of location or position or anything else. They're disoriented. You find out a great many insane people, not describing this case I just described to you, as not an insane person, not even neurotic. You find a lot of people in that condition. Now, they're pretty bad off. You find out they have a lot of psychosomatic ills, which they don't know they have. They have a headache all the time. As you're auditing the case, you suddenly, quote, turn on a somatic. Hell, you never turned on the somatic. You turned on an awareness of the existing somatic. Person's not aware that their headaches. If they thought of it a little while, their headache really ached yesterday and the day before, and it's been aching for a long time, but they're up to an awareness of the fact they had a headache. All kinds of awareness shifts take place here, and you get reactions very often which are not the same as they are advertised. You pull a mass in on a PC one way or the other, and he gets a headache. See? All right, the auditing brought in a headache, and the auditing will move the headache on out again eventually, unless it's some upside-down process. Like, what problem could you solve? Thank you. What problem could you solve? Thank you. You know, that's one of the most remarkable processes. That led us into R1C. It's many years old. If you ask a PC that, what problem could you solve? 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 He can very often see a mass moving in on him. What problem could you solve? And it's closer. What problem could you solve? See, and he answers again, it's closer. It's very amusing because you can turn this thing around and head it out the other direction. You just say, think of a problem, 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 and it's going all over the hill. Now you could turn right around and say, what problem could you solve? And it comes right back. It's quite an amusing exercise in masses. If a PC can perceive masses, he can watch this happen. So, when you're looking at a PC and processing a PC, see the PC in regard to what the PC can see, not what you can see. But learn to look at a PC from the point of view of what the PC can see. Don't then bother to limit your own vision. See? But recognize that there may be a difference here. The PC can see something and you can see something else. Actually, it would be perfectly factual because you're in two different locations and spaces, the viewpoint of dimension, you would, of course, see different things. But the point is the PC can, as is, what is real to the PC, or what he can see, what he can know, what he can perceive, what he can cotton on to. And actually, he can't do any more than that. Now, after he has perceived something, unless it is one of these deep-rooted things, the chances are it's gone. And the auditor is very stupid indeed if he thinks he's got to go on auditing it after it went. Because a PC will get very upset because you're now auditing nothing. And a PC will get very upset about this after a while. What about dogs? What about dogs? What about dogs? What about dogs? And finally the PC said, yep, dogs, yeah, dogs. Been terrified of dogs, see? Something like that. He told you, you know. Afraid of dogs. Oh, what about dogs? 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 I don't care. It's just a process, see, off the bat, see. What about dogs? What about dogs? What about dogs? See, all right, and he eventually looks at you and sort of smiles. Yeah, he said, well, that's a point. What about dogs? Now, lest the auditor can perceive that he has now changed the PC's point of view with relationship to dogs by the process of as-ising the PC's fears and solutions to dogs, as is the PC's reaction to dogs, unless the auditor can also perceive that the PC has changed, in other words, then the auditor will go on trying to audit out what he has audited out, and he can park a case. The auditor's ability to estimate, then, what he has as is part and parcel to the creation and effect on a PC. You've got to know what you've taken care of, and therefore you have to know how it is taken care of. It's taken care of by being perceived and as-is, and that's the only way it is taken care of, perceived and as-is. You ask the PC to look at something you know he can look at. He looks at it, and he as-is it, and that's the end product of auditing. I don't care whether you're doing Class 6 or Class 1. The action is the same, and that's how auditing works, and that is the effect which the auditor creates on the PC, and that's how he creates the effect on the PC. That's the only way he does. An auditor that doesn't know how auditing works and doesn't know why auditing works will commit several other sins. Amongst them is to address subjects that are not real to the PC. Another one is to run what has been run out. Another one is not to flatten what he has begun to as is. These are the various crimes that the auditor can commit with his calm cycle. So in the final analysis, an auditor who knows how auditing works and why auditing works never really gets in much of a bind. He never gets into much of an upset. I myself have had some gorgeous crashes on this particular line, as one would have with magnitude in research work. You work it because in this case you're always evaluating what's wrong with a case from a viewpoint of research so that you can add up the principles involved, don't you see? So you're always looking for this sort of thing. So you're always wishing off on cases something that is wrong with them in order to find out if it is. And I learned this the hard way very, very early. But perfectly willing to give up a theory. A theory to me is not very valuable. I can invent lots of theories. In most fields of science, a theory is so precious that it has to be set in jewels and gems, and all one's work is involved is in setting up a theory. And having set up this theory, all the rest of the work is put in on asserting that it is right. See, there isn't any further action taken with a theory than those things. That's quite common in the field of science and research. Always gone on a basis. There's always lots of theories. If this one doesn't work, there's another one. Nevertheless, every once in a while, you still will get a favorite theory. You'll get something that's very favored, you see. You go down the line and you say, there are this number of potentials with regard to this case, and so forth, and you say, isn't that a nice one? You know, isn't that particular one, number three there, isn't that nice? You say that. That'd be real, real cute, you see, if that's the right one, you know. So you start processing the PC and you favor number three. You see, you weight number three heavily. PC just sits there looking blankly at you, you know, his eyes sort of cloudy and so forth. You feel like saying to them, hey, isn't this a wonderful theory? I mean, you know, what's added up there about what I've cognited for you on your difficulty with spinach, you see, and so forth. And, hey, you know, isn't that wonderful? Sits there, his eyes cloudier. All of a sudden he says, you know, that second one you mentioned there, he says, that makes some sense. With a little change, that makes some sense.
The second one, Ed, you didn't care anything about the second one. He goes on and embroiders number two, and then all of a sudden you arrive at number four, which is the correct one, don't you see? That he can add this, and it's got a good reality on. Oh, yeah, that's it, you know, and he always leaves a bad taste in your mouth. He got well on the wrong process. Awful upsetting. I know what you're up against. You always will have these interesting theories. For heaven's sake, don't stop having them. I know what's wrong with that guy. So remember, it isn't your brightness that is held in question. It's the PC's perceptive abilities. And the PC, it isn't real to PC. Something else is real to the PC about this sort of thing. Well, don't try then to get the PC to as is your concept of it, because that isn't there to be as is. What's there to be as is his concept of it. And he also may have a much shallower concept and sometimes surprise you by having a much deeper concept of reality than is being granted by the auditor. So it's within these variabilities that you can bring a case out of the soup and so forth. The odd part of it is the world is artificially, and the universe is artificially divided into the constructive and the destructive. When you get way up topside, there is only the free. And you've actually escaped these two things. You can see that with an individual, the most constructive action that you can take with the individual would be to bring the individual into an ability himself to create and handle his own problems and situations. See, that is an ultimate. Now, that, of course, takes care of the other factor, because what would be the ultimate in destruction would be the disappearance of the traps and pitfalls that lay in his path. So you're actually not, when you come right down to it, doing a one-sided job. It only appears you are. You go off into this other destructive action toward a PC only when he appears not to as is properly to suit you. See? And that swings you down from your Olympian height of being able to cover all sides of action, you see? The ultimate in destruction, of course, is the gone. You see, and the ultimate in construction, when you're dealing with a human being and when you're dealing with a person or a spirit and so forth, is to bring it about so you say, and the individual himself can create. Those are very Olympian actions, I assure you. And when you lose on those things through your lack of understanding or bad luck or any other reason, why, you tend to drop down into the artificial segmentation of life into a constructive sphere and the 50% destructive sphere. And you start slapping back at the PC, and you start creating men out of clay, and you start doing all kinds of wild things. And just recognize that when you are reacting reactively to the PC, that you have dropped down from an ideal auditing action and have stepped into a nice, fat dramatization on your own part. Just get yourself with a scruff of the neck and say, hey, I must have slipped because I'm dramatizing. And you'll bring yourself right back up scale again. Auditing, in its most fundamental approach, is basically simple because it evades by undermining all the complexities of life. You are not now trying to dream up a solution comparable to the problems this bloke has got. That's true about life, but it's not true about auditing. You're pulling the rug out from underneath his problems because you've got the answer to why they become problems in the first place. You know how he got into the cage. Like you take an old smoothie on sec checking. He can go back down the line, pocket to pocket to pocket, to find the original overt, take that thing apart, and the whole chain just goes brrrr, and the most complicated set of problems that you ever heard of just blow right off on that particular subject. He just fishes out and so forth. Sometimes the reverse will be found. He imagined he had a problem which he didn't have, or imagined he had an overt which he didn't have, or something. That can be uncovered too. But you're pulling the
the string which unties the sugar sack. And that's rather interesting. Otherwise, it would be so complex that nobody could ever have anything to do with it. You could never do anything with it. Auditing would have to be as complicated as life if auditing were a solution to life. Unfortunately, it isn't a solution to life. It's an as-isness of the less desirable parts of existence. And all you have to do is know this one approach of what you're trying to deliver to the PC, and you'll be able to pull it off every time, rather simply. Thank you.